Greetings, everyone. I'm excited to welcome Stephen Nailamans, founder and CEO at Luna.ai. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me and for pronouncing my name right. That's very interesting.
I try. I talk to a lot of global founders, so I do my best here. So appreciate you coming on today. Excited for this episode. Let's kick this off. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I'm Stephen. I'm Stephen for the Americans. I'm Dutch. So I'm based in the Netherlands in Europe. I have a bit of a mixed background. I started as an electrical engineering student at the University of Technology here in the Netherlands. But then I quickly dropped out and started my first startup at age 19. That startup, I was the CEO there, founder CEO. So I basically moved from the technical side to the commercial side of the company, more strategy, fundraising, sales, and basically adjacent of technology, which was very interesting. And I've been doing that ever since. So now, 10 years later, I'm working on a new venture, Luna AI, founder CEO again. And yeah. It's awesome.
Okay, great. So yeah, electrical engineering student, then, you know, going right into your first startup. That's great. So a lot of experience so far at this stage. So yeah, let's talk about Luna. Tell us what products and or services does Luna offer?
Yeah. So basically we are an all-in-one B2B sales platform, which means that we are focused on the top of funnel part of sales. So basically you as an SDR, a account executive, you are focused on full funnel work, and lead generation takes up a big part of that. And we build a platform that can find leads for you. So it does the sourcing of the leads. It scrapes the entire internet. So it scrapes websites, social profiles, and stuff like that. And then it uses all of that information to write mind-blowing sales deals for the outbound sales strategies. Basically, you can train the AI as well. And as soon as you train it enough, you can hit start, then Luna Autonomous Mode comes on, where Luna starts reaching out to potential prospects on your behalf. So that's what we built so far. And we're launching new features every day. So we're growing quickly.
Oh, that's great. So you're, like you said, top of funnel or tofu, trying to find those kind of cold leads, write those emails. So you're like that right hand person for then you, like you said, the AE or the SDR, BDR, you know, to help them in their process to make it more efficient.
Exactly. So the main focus for us, or our ICP, so to say, our ideal customer in that sense, is the first few hires at a SaaS company. So let's say you have a SaaS company, a B2B SaaS company, you are growing, you go from founder net sales, like the founder, of course, and doing all of the sales conversations towards being more operational and more organized. So you start hiring people in the team. And the interesting thing that's happening then, there's a big shift in dynamics. So there's new people who are unfamiliar with the product and the founding story and do not necessarily, they have a different way of approaching your customers than if it's your own company. So that's an interesting one. But also there's a lot of pressure to perform. So, well, of course, you know, as a CFO, that the average salesperson needs 6 to 9 months to prove their worth. And well, most of the SaaS companies don't have that kind of time. So that's a very interesting dynamic. So they need to hit the ground running. And that's what we're focusing on with Luna, because Luna can learn very quickly about what your company does and what your value proposition is and who your ideal customers are. And that means that we can give these AEs or new sales hires a head start when they get going.
Yeah, when they get going. Yeah, appreciate that. That makes a ton of sense. And you mentioned first few hires at a SaaS company. So that is your ICP or ideal customer profile. So are you targeting SaaS companies initially? Are you going to expand, or is this just you're purely focused on helping SaaS companies?
This is our beachhead. So we want to focus on this first. Of course, we want to prevent companies from dropping Luna as soon as Luna makes them successful. So let's say you're a small SaaS company, Luna is doing what it's supposed to be doing, and you're growing with all these amazing new customers, and then Luna is not going to fit anymore. That's, of course, something that we want to prevent. So we're initially building for that first phase of the journey where the first sales hires come in and everything becomes more structured and more organized. And now we're growing along these companies and basically going through the sales funnel, not only focusing on top of funnel work, but expanding throughout the sales funnel as well. And simultaneously also make Luna a better fit for bigger sales teams. So the more people you hire, that they can also work together seamlessly.
Okay. In the focus on SaaS, and obviously this seems applicable to a lot of B2B companies who have that cold outreach. So are you going to target other industries eventually, or keep it to SaaS?
Eventually we'll do that. And also a chunk of our customers are not necessarily SaaS companies. So it's available. Like we're, if you're not a SaaS company and you want to use Luna, you're of course happy to. Like the main thing that we're doing right now in getting our company off the ground and making sure that we keep that growth going is that we focus on one particular customer set where we can identify the needs and we see that the pain points are highest. And like I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, like one of the main pain points that we're targeting is pressure to perform. And for SaaS companies, being a software company with on average a lower barrier to entry, the pressure to perform is very high. And that's something that we can help them perfectly with. So that's the reason why we mainly focus on SaaS.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. So what year did you found Luna?
We founded the company officially in 2022. So that's, well, it's 24 right now. And I'm used to saying last year, but it's a couple of weeks in 2 years ago. But we've been working on the idea for a while already. So the interesting thing is like for my first startup, I had a sales team. So there was a company I worked for 5.5 years. I grew the company to about 85 people on the team, of which about 10 were full-time salespeople. And the thing is with these salespeople is that most of these people were doing top of funnel, full funnel work, where they had a full funnel responsibility, and they were spending a lot of time behind a computer. So that's already where the initial idea started. And then I kept on thinking about it, and also together with my co-founders of Luna AI, like, how can we solve this? And we could solve everything except for like the personalization thing, because we kept on getting back to the same template, like, hey, Ben, awesome to see you working at the SaaS Academy. This is my product, please buy. Or like, hey, you want to schedule a demo next week, which is the average of everything that is hitting our mailboxes as we speak. So we wanted to get rid of that. And then through a mutual friend, I came in touch with one of the first employees at OpenAI. And then they started pitching their services and we were like, so, and then since then we spent about half a year trying to figure out back, okay, how can we build this into a proper company? And then, well, we started.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, appreciate that background. And now you mentioned you're from the Netherlands. Is the company located there, or are you remote virtual?
It's completely remote. So we have our investors and our employees all over the world. And I mentioned this before this podcast that I'm also in the process of spending a lot of my time in California, and which is also where the company is located. Mainly because most of our customers are there and part of our investors and hopefully a lot of our future investors are there as well. So that's why we're a US-based company.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exciting. And then tell me, what's your current team size?
We are with 9 people in total. So 3 founders and 6 people in the team.
Okay. 9 people with 3 founders. And tell me, obviously you're one of the co-founders and 2 others. So you mentioned, you know, kind of a technical background. Does each of your founders bring a different background to the company?
100%. Yeah. So we had 3 founders. We have Jean-Paul, he is our chief growth, who is really like, I sometimes call him the embodiment of our product. So he has been working on different growth hacks and growth strategies for years already. So most of the features that we're building, which are not, of course, coming from our customers, are coming from him because he has this weird like brain dumble for like another amazing growth hack or another amazing way to prompt new language models or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then we just built that into the product and then our users can use it as well. And we have Robin, who is our CTO / chief product, who is basically capable of doing everything from design to front end, back end and AI. So he's the jack of all trades and interestingly a master of all, which is pretty contradictory, but that's really cool. And then there's me, who is responsible for most of the other stuff that's going on inside the company.
Okay. And so founder 2022, so probably, you know, still kind of early stage. So are you generating revenue now? Or are you pre-revenue?
We're generating revenue. So, and we have been for about a year. But the interesting thing is like, especially in a dynamic market, like what we've seen, the more dynamic the market is and the generative AI market is very, very dynamic, the more difficult it is to find an ICP because there is a lot of interest from companies who do not necessarily have a pain, but it's also like the hype is amazing. Like everyone wants to do something with AI without them actually needing to. So that's why we, and I see that also all around me in terms of like the companies who are also trying to build similar solutions to ours, is that they take a lot of time to try to get out of that early stage. Like who is really going to find that ICP? Who is really going to make sure that they build something that these people cannot live without? And then like they're going to enter the higher growth stages.
Yeah, makes sense. And then I love this next question because based on your product, so tell us a little bit about your go-to-market motion, right? You're helping SaaS companies with their go-to-market top of funnel, you know, so I assume you're using your product. So tell us a little bit about how you're landing your customers.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting one and also a very simple answer because we're using Lunar, right? That's also the interesting thing. One of our early investors said that to us. He said that most started, and we didn't even write a line of code. We just had the idea. We're like, hey, we're looking money to build the initial MVP. Do you want to join, yes or no? And then he said, well, the interesting thing is most early stage companies have two problems. They need to find product market fit, and they need to find a scalable commercial strategy, scalable sales strategy. And for Lunar, that was one and the same. So he said, you probably have like 50% more chance of being successful, which was his reasoning of investing at that stage. But yeah, we're using our own product and we're using that at scale. So we have, I think, about 50 SDRs, like AI SDRs running as we speak, reaching out to people, just telling them about like, hey, this is the product that we're building. And then of course, following all of the best practices that we find with our customers. And apart from that, we also have like a product net field strategy. So but then like everyone can onboard themselves, that you can just go to the website, start a free trial, and then get the credit card and sign up for a monthly plan. And then for the bigger companies, we have custom deals that we make and stuff like that. So that's basically our thing. But up until the sign up, everything is Lunar.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I expected. I want to dive into what you mentioned, PLG, so product-led growth. So do you see, in me, I don't know if it's too early, but use cases where you have a sales rep, right? They've got to, you know, build their funnel. So they're paying for it. I don't know what the price is, but paying for it for themselves maybe. And then you see other people using it. So tell us a little bit how your PLG motion works.
Yeah, we mostly are working for relatively small companies. So we have, most of the times we have the buy-in from the company itself. So it's either like the first sales hire who also gets a budget to set up all the operations and therefore set up the software as well. Or there is like a direct founder who knows that they're going to need to invest in software. And that's why they pay for Lunar. We had some occasions in the past where we had like Fortune 500 company sales reps who paid for it out of pocket and then started generating leads and then with less time get more commission, which is what they've been doing for a while. But there's also some struggles there because they needed to work, for example, from like a highly, how do you say that, closed off version of Salesforce where we could not enter, of course, and then they had to do everything manually. It didn't necessarily work. So most of the times we're directly working with the company and therefore the DMU also within the company.
Okay. And one question that I just think about is can you adapt to any language? Is this English only right now, or do you support multiple languages?
We support every language in the world. We also have customers from all over the world, literally from, of course, like US and Europe, the Netherlands, but also Africa, Asia, South America, and stuff like that. So we support every language. Having said that, English is of course best because most, like, we're also training our models on like the emails that we're sending. So the higher the density of customers we have in a single language, the better the models will be. And that's why we see that most of our customers are in English speaking countries. A larger chunk is also in the Netherlands. So our Dutch models are getting better and better. And the rest is like last 5% of our customers are spread all over the world. So it's not perfect. You can make it work, but it's not perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So let's switch over to the fundraising side. How much capital have you raised to date?
$2.5 million.
Okay. So is that $2.5 billion USD or euros or?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. USD. Sorry. I'm so used to speaking in dollars that I forget to mention it as well, but I understand it could be confusing.
Yeah. Okay. So raised $2.5 billion USD. And I think that was characterized as a pre-seed round.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
Exactly.
And so founded in 2022, you know, developing the product, two other co-founders. So what led you to that pre-seed raise? Was there a milestone, a trigger? Tell us a little bit about the logic around raising that pre-seed round.
The main thing, what the logic behind raising a pre-seed round was mainly that we found that we had early traction. So we had customers paying for it. We had expanded revenue. We had like a lot of interest from the market, but we did not have, like, basically we had the first part of the journey, so to say, the customer journey figured out, because we knew how to get a lot of customers in a very short time with minimal investment because we were using our own product. And then we knew that there was like a longer step ahead where we also needed to maintain them and retain them. And that's also why we raised this round, because we knew that if we can buy the focus, so to say, for us to really dive deep into who is our perfect customer and how are we going to make sure that in 10 years, these people are still, they still can't live without Luna. We need some time for that. And we need some time without the pressure of making payroll every month and yeah, basically like that. So for us, the reason behind the pre-seed round was mostly buying the time and buying that the ability to focus on that, and therefore also preparing for our next fundraise, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, no, yeah, appreciate that. And then that comes up a lot. It sounds like you did see, like you said, early traction, you're seeing expansion revenue, you've got kind of a rough ICP figured out, you know, that, all right, now we can take it to the next step. And of course, yeah, it's nice having long cash runways. So for other founders who are kind of in that similar stage, maybe they're year in thinking about a, you know, pre-seed, seed, any lessons learned in that process that you'd like to share?
For me personally, but that's also a personal preference, and that might be my European / Dutch background as well, is I always like to raise a funding round later than I can, so to say. So I do not try to push valuations I do not try to push valuations. I do not try to basically sell investors on, basically it's the under promise over deliver thing. So that's like, to give you an example, we had a revenue projection, which we gave up in like the second or third meeting with our lead investor. And then 2 weeks into the DD, they called me and they asked like, hey, how is it going? And then we were overperforming by 8% already a couple of weeks. So that was an entirely different conversation than if you're underperforming, for example. So this is something that I personally like to do, because that makes the fundraising process less time consuming, because you're basically telling these investors, like, it's still a lot of money and it's still a high valuation, but it's, you're not pushing it, right? And therefore you can, like, I could re-raise this round in, I think, 3 months or something, which could have also cost us 5 months, maybe, or maybe even longer. And this is for me also a way to, if I can wait just a bit longer and make the deal relatively better for the investors, then I can also make it better for myself, because I have more time to spend on building the actual company instead of spending everything on fundraising.
Yeah, I appreciate that insight. There's always that balance with that forecast to make it look attractive, but then not, like you said, oversell it. And then after, right, post-investment, they're like, hey, this is the forecast. Are you performing? You know, so that does come around. It can either help you or hurt you later. So appreciate that insight. So Steven, at this point in your journey, kind of 2 years in, do you have a favorite number or metric that you're focused on to guide the business?
Yeah, we have a few. Like, we're continuously trying to track everything, because we do not want to make any decision without data involved. So we're tracking over 200 key metrics at this moment of like usage and retention and stuff like that. My personal favorite is relative. That's the LTV divided by the CAC, like LTV by CAC, because that's just a very beautiful one to look at, mainly because our customer acquisition costs are so low because we are using our own product. So that's but that's just like a personal favorite. It's that one that we look at every day in order to make sure that the business is going well. That's just one that I personally really like because of our choices that we made in terms of our commercial strategy. So our commercial strategy is dependent on us building our own product, and the better we can do that, the higher our LTV by CAC is.
Okay. Yeah. LTV to CAC, a very ubiquitous SaaS metric. Yeah. So definitely, yeah, can be very applicable, especially in like lower enterprise, you know, can be all over the place when you're calculating LTV to CAC, but kind of on the other end, you know, it's definitely, you can really dial that in. So appreciate that insight.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up today, tell me, Steve, what's coming up next for the company in 2024?
Then 2024 is going to be really cool because we have been spending a lot of time in the last year to figure out like, okay, who are we going to build? What are we going to build? And what are the problems that we can actually solve? And we found that out, like we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, and now we're got to solve them. So yeah, like we're, like I said, we're shipping features every day. We're building as well. I would also almost call it maniacs, where we're trying to get as much done and the shortest number possible, because in the end, we want to be the company and we want to be the platform that these people cannot live without in the next 10 years. So that's what we're going for. So we're going to support multiple, we're going to do outbound sources, we're going to do inbound lead source. We're going to go throughout the entire sales funnel, basically giving every AE an army of AI SDRs so that they can lower the number of times they switch contacts and like they focus on execution and closing deals.
Okay. Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing what happens this year. So Steven, really appreciate you sharing your time and experiences today. If listeners would like to learn more about Luna, where should we send them online?
That's luna.ai. So that's our website. You can check out all of the information about Luna AI itself. And of course, give it a try if you want. Of course, 14 days are for free. So go ahead and take it for a spin.
That's great. So if you'd like to accelerate the top of your funnel, check out luna.ai. So luna.ai. So Steven, really, again, appreciate your time and sharing your experiences today.
Thanks for having me.